From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
In accordance with the city charter, I assume the role as mayor of the city and county of San Francisco, effective immediately.
That was acting San Francisco Mayor London Breed on Tuesday announcing the sudden death of Mayor Ed Lee. And as the community comes to terms with Mayor Lee's passing, local politicians are looking ahead to what's sure to be a crowded and contentious mayor's race. We'll take a look at the players and talk about how fundamentally San Francisco city politics will be changed by this unexpected and tragic shakeup at City Hall. It's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. San Franciscans woke up Tuesday morning to the shocking news of the passing of Mayor Ed Lee. But as the city mourns, it also faces two mayoral races in under 2 years and the possibility of a profound change in city politics. We'll take a look at the contenders for the seat with the filing deadline for the June special election just weeks away. And from housing to tech, for good or ill, Ed Lee made his mark on the city. How will his signature policies fare under a new administration? Joining me for the hour is Heather Knight, columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning.
Good morning.
We also have with us in studio Alex Clemens, who is founder of Barbary Consulting. He also covers city politics on the website sfusualsuspects.com. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And we'll also say good morning to Tim Redman, who's here with us as well, editor of 48hills.org, an online daily newspaper.
Good morning.
Always happy to be on your show.
Happy to have all of you here. Sad circumstances, of course, with the mayor's passing, and we talked about it Tuesday morning, and also talked about his legacy. And let me begin, if I may, with you, Heather Knight, in talking about legacy, because in a column you talked about the fact that maybe the priorities for the mayor, and we'll talk about those in the course of this hour, but you mentioned housing and tent encampments and drug use specifically, that triad. And the reality is, we're going to, of course, talk about leadership, but you raised the real question, about what can be done about those to carry on those things that matter to him.
Right. I get so many emails every day from San Franciscans who are just so tired of what they see on the streets and sidewalks of our city every day and don't understand what City Hall is doing about it because it's not obvious that things are getting any better. But behind the scenes, Mayor Lee was, you know, working hard. He created a standalone department to address homelessness for the first time in the city and building navigation centers. He was backing a controversial safe injection site where drug users could shoot up inside in hopes of getting needles off the street. And that's a big initiative that remains to be fulfilled.
Yeah, you've just given a good list of many of the things that he was achieving and that he was certainly ambitious about, which he expressed in the last interview we did with him. I mean, there's always that controversy, though, that we talked about when we talked about his legacy of making San Francisco into a tech town and causing displacement of so many people and maybe exacerbating, in some sort, the homeless problem, which he was trying to ameliorate. How do you see things changing or likely to change with respect to regulation of tech?
I think that's a big unanswered question. I don't know. It will really depend on who becomes our next mayor. Mayor Lee focused in his first 4 years on luring the tech industry here. He said jobs, jobs, jobs. He created 140,000 jobs, in fact. But, of course, there were a lot of unintended consequences from that the city is still struggling to grapple with in terms of affordability, homelessness, and lack of housing.
Well, there were some strict regulations from Lyndon Breed's point of view that were necessary for Airbnb. That was not the case with Mayor Lee. And also, when it came to not only the Twitter tax, but when it came to Lyft and Uber and so forth, he was even visiting tech on a regular basis. So he became associated with tech. Whoever is going to succeed him probably won't have that high a profile, it's safe to assume.
Yeah, he was obviously close friends with Ron Conway, the venture capitalist, and visited Twitter dozens of times, was really focused on the tech industry. But I think in the last year or two was realizing that he had to move beyond that and focus on these other issues that had cropped up kind of as a side effect.
That had cropped up and continued to burgeon with us. Alex Clemens, let me go to you about really the upheaval we have now. I mean, let's see if we can sort of sort through this. London Breed is pretty much in the mayor's role now. In fact, she's put out press releases calling herself the mayor, and she's been in a pretty good position, but she's got a lot of competition.
Before we get into the horse race, I think it's important to note that this is about 48 hours old, 55 hours old at this point, and a family has lost their patriarch and a set of staffers, and political family of San Francisco have a big hole in their side, and there's a real personal toll. I want to start with a little PSA. There will be two opportunities for San Francisco to come together to celebrate Mayor Lee. The first one is tomorrow. His body will be lying in state in the rotunda of City Hall from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. And on Sunday at 3 p.m., there will be a celebration of his life at City Hall.
Well, on Monday, we talked a lot about how beloved he was as a mayor, and people expressed a good deal of their concern and deep feeling about him. On both sides of the ledger, of course, as is expected posthumously. But just wondering how things shape up now. I mean, I don't want to jump into a horse race, and I recognize the tone of what you're taking here and respect it and certainly respect the sense of his family's mourning and the people in the city who are mourning for him. But right now, we've got a pretty short term in terms of deciding. People have to sign up if they're going to run for mayor, in the next few weeks, really?
Less than the next 4 weeks. January 9th is the filing deadline if you want to run for mayor in June of 2018, which will be a wide-open mayor's race. There is a delicate balancing act being performed by most, if not all, of the people who have seen their names bandied about as potential mayoral aspirants to, on the one hand, take the 17 months of planning that has been wiped off the board for the campaign and rejigger plans for November 2019 into June of 2018. And secondly, to maintain a level of respect that doesn't offend the people of San Francisco, as we still have not even buried this mayor. So it's quite interesting at City Hall. People are saying all the right things and murmuring it's not quite the right time yet. And yet at the same time, I don't know a campaign consultant in town who hasn't had their phone burned up by a variety of folks who figured they had another 6 to 8 months to figure out who to hire. It's a tumultuous time, and I imagine many politicians are gravely explaining to family members how their holiday plans for travel may be slightly upset this year, as the few precious days between now and January 9th will go all too quickly.
Well, let us suss this out a bit. In terms of some of those who are considering run for mayor, just so people get a picture of what the field is going to look like. And right now, as I said, it's fairly safe to say that London Breed is in a pretty good position. However, the Board of Supervisors, which doesn't tend to agree on much, and there still remain divisions, maybe even more divisions in the wake of Ed Lee's death, but there's a sense of if six of them actually come on board, they can appoint an interim mayor, but that's very unlikely, isn't it?
I think that's yet to be seen, and let's make the math even more complicated. If the Board of Supervisors chooses, and they may if they choose to, but they're under no requirement to, if the Board of Supervisors chooses to consider a motion to fill the vacancy of the mayor's office, they must do so with six votes, but you're not allowed to vote for yourself. And since several of the mayoral aspirants sit on the Board of Supervisors, one must find six votes of 10 other people as opposed to six votes out of 11. Doesn't sound like a big difference, but it actually makes the deal exponentially harder.
London Breed is one of those voting supervisors.
She's
now holding the three roles at
three
once.
Jobs. Yeah. Three jobs, one salary, and it's the lower paid salary of the mayor's and the Board of Supervisors.
Well, she
salary.
Can triple her salary if she becomes the mayor.
And right? Lose two jobs all at once.
Yeah. But we've also got, I expect there's an advantage here. Let's go to you on this, Tim Redmond, for Mark Leno, who's been in this campaigning. I mean, he's raised about $140,000, $400,000, excuse me, by his lights, and has been campaigning already and has signed up, the only one of the candidates who signed up, but not necessarily helping where David Chu is concerned, because he's in the assembly and he's going to have to essentially decide whether he wants to rerun for the assembly or run for the mayor's office.
That's right. That's one of the strange twists. Now, obviously, Mark Leno is in the race. And he has raised a lot of money for the 2019 race, which presumably he will be able to use for this one because it's the same race and the same campaign contribution. So he has been out actively running for mayor. So, he obviously has somewhat of a leg up on some of the other competitors. David Chu has been interested in the mayor's office and has run for mayor in the past. But yes, because this election, this June 5th, 2018 election, is the same day as the primary for state assembly, he would have to give that office up. On the other hand, Dennis Herrera, who has also expressed interest in the past in running for mayor, would not have to give up his job as city attorney to do that in June, whereas in 2019, he would have to give up his job as city attorney to run for mayor because they're on the same election. So it's all become kind of topsy-turvy here. And to throw in another element of all of this, we are mourning Mayor Ed Lee, and we are talking about the things that he did for the city, and everybody is right now talking about what a wonderful guy he was. And yet, his approval ratings were very, very low at this time. And so the person who runs for mayor is going to both have to be respectful to Ed Lee, but also separate him or herself, because the person who's going to get elected, who's most likely to get elected mayor, is going to be somebody who runs on a platform of change and says, no, I'm not going to be the same as Ed Lee. And yes, there are an awful lot of problems in the city that were not solved under his administration. And so it's going to be a real tricky move for people over the next. And all of this has to happen, by the way, in 25 days.
Didn't you also say in one of your columns, progressives have lost every race since 1987 when Art Agnes beat John Molinari?
Just about, unless you want to count Willie Brown beating Frank Jordan. But other than that, progressives have not had a good record. And you know, and yet this is an opportunity to say, wait a minute, the city, the policies, I'm not talking about the mayor himself, but the policies of Ed Lee were not popular and are not popular among the voters right now. So that's what's going to have to happen, is a candidate's going to have to emerge and say, I'm going to do something different.
Well, you were one of those who was critical, particularly of his attitude toward high tech. And under his watch, I think you said 400,000 people managed to leave the city. So again, the whole question gets down to, one of the big questions gets down to, what's going to be the relationship of the ongoing relationship between the Board of Supervisors and whomever the new mayor is and tech?
Yes, that is going to be one of the big questions. And it's partially tech regulations, which you talked about already. It's also tech money. It's also a question of how much tech companies and developers pay to the city, how much they pay in fees, how much they pay in taxes. I mean, there has been talk, for example, about putting a tech tax on the ballot to increase the gross receipts tax on tech companies. There are all kinds of things like this that are going to come up, and that will be part of it. That will be one of the big questions because, you know, as we all know, in creating 140,000 jobs, many, many of those employees moved here from someplace else, and there were not 140,000 housing units for them to move into, which is why we've seen so much displacement.
You had a couple of questions, actually, that you wanted to raise with the mayor and didn't get the opportunity to. You want to talk about those? Because they were big in your mind.
Obviously. Well, I've had...
you had more than a couple, but I mean, there was a...
You know, one of the
judging by your column in Seven Hills.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask the mayor is whether he would support the repeal of the Costa-Hawkins bill, which prevents rent controls on vacant apartments. And this is, you know, years ago, this was a major issue in San Francisco, and really one that clearly differentiated progressives from the more moderate types. Should you have rent control on vacant apartments? And if you did, there would be no incentive for landlords to evict longtime low rent paying tenants because the rent wouldn't be able to go up. So there is a measure in Sacramento now that would repeal that state bill. Tenants are very frustrated because while Assemblymember David Chu is officially a co-sponsor, he has not called a hearing in the Housing Committee. Nothing has happened. This bill isn't moving forward. And while Mayor Lee was out front in seeking to repeal the Ellis Act, another anti-tenant bill, we hadn't heard a word from him on this. And we haven't, you know, it's too soon to hear from London Breed on this, but I think that the role that San Francisco can play, particularly in pushing our own members of the legislature to get more tenant-friendly bills in Sacramento to try to prevent some of this displacement. You know, Heather was talking about earlier how many people are really upset by the numbers of homeless people on the street, and that situation is not getting better. Part of the reason is that 70% of the homeless people on the street today used to have a home in San Francisco, and they have lost that home through some type of eviction or displacement. So if we want to get a grip on homelessness, one of the things that we have to do first is get a grip on all these evictions. So that was one of the questions that I had for Ed Lee.
You were going to ask about this ballot measure, which would guarantee a
lawyer. I was also going to ask him if he would support, and this will be an interesting question for Acting Mayor London Breed, will they support a ballot measure that would require that any tenant facing eviction has the right to a lawyer, which again would help fight off. So, you know, homelessness and these housing issues cut two ways. One is obviously we need to build more affordable housing. But the second thing is we have to stop losing affordable housing to evictions.
Well, we're talking about Mayor Ed Lee's unexpected death, shaking up San Francisco politics and what it means for the future of the city and county of San Francisco. Tim Redman is editor of 48hills.org, an online daily newspaper, and Alex Clemens is the founder of Lighthouse Public Affairs, not Barbary Consultant, and he also started the website usualsuspects.com, which covers San Francisco politics. Heather Knight is also here with us, columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and you can be here with us as well. Let me, in fact, at this point, invite your calls and your emails. You can join us now toll-free with comments or questions, thoughts that you have about how the shaping up of San Francisco politics is apt to go and what kind of leadership is in the offing. You can join us at our toll-free number again. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls now at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments you have there. Website is kqed.org/forum and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. One way or another, we certainly welcome your involvement in the program. And let me go back to Heather Knight, who, as I said, is columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. And there's just so many things, really, that have to be taken into account here as we assess where we're going on the next trajectory, Heather. I mean, we're talking, I mean, we've raised certainly a lot of the major issues. But housing costs and traffic congestion and widespread homelessness, Ed Lee really had a vision in many respects, regardless of how many detractors he had. And there were many supporters and many people who loved the mayor and many people who certainly criticized him. But he had a vision of, well, moving forward with construction and with the navigation centers and also with trying to do things. He said that here on the air about the traffic congestion and the things that I just ticked off. Can we get the kind of leadership, and Tim pointed out, you know, his numbers were not high in terms of popularity, but can we get that kind of leadership that has at least a vision behind it and details behind it?
Yeah, I think everybody is admiring what a nice, well-meaning person Ed Lee was. Nobody had a bad thing to say about him personality-wise, but of course a lot of people had a lot of issues with his policies and the way he was leading San Francisco, and I think it'll be really interesting to see how much of this hard work does get done over the 6 months while everybody's politicking on the side. Of course, they're all saying, we're still going to keep the city running and, you know, keep the momentum going to get all of this done. Of course, they're saying that to me, but we'll see if that actually happens because, as Alex said, on the side, they're all calling their consultants and discussing
the division, excuse me, between the moderates and the progressives? A great deal is made out of this, and I think it's going to change whoever is going to take over the mayoral job.
Yeah, it's pretty evenly split right now, maybe slightly tilted towards the moderates on the board, but it's not like one side has a vast amount of power at City Hall, I would say. And so it'll be interesting to see who emerges as the leader. London Breed is kind of a swing vote, so she's sort of in the middle on the board. And TBD, I guess.
Well, but it's also more fragmented, perhaps, than it's been quite some time. And let's talk with you, Alex Clemens, a little bit more about who else is possible candidate. I mean, there have been a lot of names mentioned, Supervisors Mark Farrell and Jane Kim, who both are going to be termed out next year. Daniel Lurie is a name that we keep hearing, the head of Tipping Point, philanthropist. Scott Wiener, who's pretty much said there's no interest at this point. At this point, it's very hard to say. I mean, I hate to talk about it as a horse race and everything, but it is.
It's almost impossible not to, despite the circumstances. And I appreciate you being caring, as are we all, about the actual human toll that's taken place. I think the list you have is substantially correct. I believe that former supervisor and current assessor recorder Carmen Chu has
neglected to mention her, or Tom Amiano, who I think would make Tim Redman happier than you can possibly say.
Tim and Tom hang out every week and do a podcast that's very well listened to. Daniel Lurie is probably the name that your listeners might be least familiar with. He has started Tipping Point Community, which is a grant-making organization that takes 100% of the money that comes in and sends it out to organizations and demands metrics and results.
And does great work.
He's built quite an organization, and earlier this year committed $100 million to helping San Francisco address continued homelessness issues. He's a serious guy.
We did an hour with him and Jeff Kaczynski on the homelessness issues and on the grant that he made through Tipping Point. I just mentioned that because it's in our archives if you want to go and listen.
I'm sure all of the folks who listened to that had their IQ go up by 3 or 4 points. That's a good group of people. Yeah, the horse race is very interesting. Of course, Mark Leno has one form of a lead with early endorsements and money in the bank and an existing campaign organization. London Breed has an early lead, given the virtue of her position as San Francisco's acting mayor. And it's important to remember the differentiations. Acting mayor is because of her position as president of the Board of Supervisors. Should the Board of Supervisors get together and agree with six votes on one San Franciscan of legal voting age, that's the only requirement. Could be you, Michael. Could be you, Tim. Could be Heather. Can't be me. I don't live in town.
Neither do I.
So. No. Well, all right. We're out.
I'm willing myself out, too.
Probably not the next mayor sitting in this room right now. But
I would guess that's probably true, yeah.
If they get together and among six of them choose an adult of voting age who lives in San Francisco to serve as mayor through June of 2018, that person will be the interim mayor, and that person cannot hold a second job, such as supervisor or city attorney or assessor recorder. That person would then be the interim mayor up until the expiration of Mayor Lee's term, at which point we would have a mayor, and it would be nice to get back to that.
Well, Tim, how do you see this shaping up? We're coming up on a break here, but I'd like to get your input.
Well, I think Alex listed a lot of the people who are talking about running.
David Campos, too, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if I have not heard David Campos express any interest. But on the other hand, if David Chu were to decide to run for mayor, then his assembly seat would be open in the June primary. And then I think you would see at least one or two people, at least David Campos, possibly Jane Kim, who knows who else might end up running for that state assembly seat, which adds another twist, of course, to all of this, if that's what David Chu were to decide to do. I think over the next couple of weeks, as Alex said, people are calling consultants, people are talking to possible donors, trying to figure out how they can position themselves, trying to figure out who everyone's looking around to see who else is going to run and see whether who wants to move first. And of course, to throw another wrench into all of this, if, as Alex said, the Board of Supervisors appoints an interim mayor who may not be and most likely at this point would not be a member of the current Board of Supervisors, because I don't see how any of the existing supervisors could get six votes for that position without voting for themselves. If they appoint an interim mayor who is not somebody on the list that we've talked about, would that person then suddenly be in a position to decide to file to run for mayor? The twist on that, of course, is that it's the same day. On January 9th, the Board of Supervisors will have its next post-holiday meeting. And by 5 o'clock that day, anyone who wants to run for mayor would have to file. So if they appointed an interim mayor who at 2:30, that person would then have to dash down to the Department of Elections and file to run.
Alex Clemons, you wanted to say something very quickly.
Tim covered my point.
He did. Okay. So, listeners, you have your points, and we want you to join us. We're talking about the shape of politics in the wake of the tragic death of Mayor Ed Lee and how things are shaping up. Particularly, you may want to talk about budget priorities, or you may simply want to ask questions about the politics that are happening right as we speak. You can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the unexpected death of Mayor Ed Lee shaking up San Francisco politics and what it means, and we should say that a memorial celebration for Mayor Lee will take place Sunday afternoon in the San Francisco City Hall Rotunda. And the mayor, again, who died of a heart attack on Tuesday, will lie in state in the rotunda from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. tomorrow. Joining me for the hour to talk about what we can face in terms of San Francisco politics up ahead, Heather Knight, columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, Alex Clemons, founder of Lighthouse Public Affairs, and he also covers city politics on the website sfusualsuspects.com. Tim Redman, also with us, editor of 48hills.org, an online daily newspaper. Let me go to your calls, and let's begin with a caller from Bernal Heights. Tim, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering whatever happened to all those FBI investigations and the city hall corruption in 2015. I think London Breed was accused of getting untraceable debit cards by a guy named Durf Butler. Tim Redman actually wrote a column about it on August 4th, 2015. I'm wondering how this is going to affect the race. There was a lot of corruption. Whatever happened with those investigations? Were they just kind of forgotten about? I mean, City Hall seemed to be up for sale. There was Zula Jones and a bunch of people who were seemed kind of shady, in my opinion. I'm just wondering, whatever happened with all that stuff, it just kind of vanished.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Tim. You want to?
Well, there were.
Update
I mean,
us?
Obviously, there have been a couple of City Hall figures who were indicted, in that investigation. However, nothing further has come. There has been no further evidence suggesting that London Breed or anyone else currently in office was doing anything illegal. Those were allegations that were made as part of the investigation that, wound up with several people going to prison last year, including a former member of the state Senate. I think if the FBI had significant evidence on anyone who's currently at City Hall, we would have heard about it by now.
Anything to add, Alex or Heather? No? Okay. We'll go on to more of your calls. Let me go next to Peter in San Francisco. Good morning.
Yes, hi. The question I've got is mechanics, I guess. What happens with District 5 supervisorial position? If London Breed were to become interim, I assume she would be able to appoint a successor. And then what would happen with respect to an actual election and so on and so forth?
Yeah, Heather Knight.
Yeah, so if she remains acting mayor, she still represents her constituents in District 5. She has all of these different hats at the same time. If the board were to appoint an interim mayor instead and did choose her, she would have to give up her supervisor seat, and there would also be an open election in June, which could make things even more complicated for the supervisor race in District 5.
Well, in light of that complication, here's Keith, who wants to know, why is there an election for an interim mayor? Why not just elect a new permanent mayor?
The city charter says that if there's a vacancy in the office of mayor or any of the supervisors, whoever is appointed to that position must face the voters at the next possible election. And that would mean that whoever is appointed to the mayor's office by the Board of Supervisors will have to face the voters in June, no matter what. And that person then would become the mayor of San Francisco. That's not an interim job anymore. That's a person who would then fill out the last, 18 months of Ed Lee's term, and then would be eligible to run again and again. So potentially, given the power of incumbency and how that has worked in the city, the person who was elected in June could be our mayor for the next 10 years.
And here's Bob, Alex, who wants to know from you. Well, let me read what he writes here. Please ask Alex, who is well connected to the Democratic County Central Committee and the tech community, how will tech's hold on policy change when executives of the Democratic County Central Committee are also lobbyists for those very tech companies?
Well, he may be overstating my ability and reach. I would echo what Heather said earlier about the person who holds the mayor's office and the priorities that that individual holds most dear will substantially inform the trajectory of our city. And while Mayor Lee spent a great deal of his political capital and attention on investment in the mid-market neighborhoods, bringing in jobs and jobs and jobs, as he repeatedly discussed, I don't know that the next mayor, who will inherit a very healthy, economically healthy city, will have the same level of focus. It will be interesting to see how the various candidates for the seat position themselves between now and June vis-a-vis our city's focus on job creation and our city's struggle with housing creation.
I want to also bring up, apropos of that to some degree, one of the mayor's last requests, and he talked about this on the air with us, was to declare a citywide emergency and fast-track homeless shelters construction. That was voted in just recently by the Board of Supervisors.
There was robust debate on Tuesday, the same day that the mayor passed away, with general allies fighting amongst themselves about the state of emergency. I was in board chambers and watched some rather heated debates going back and forth between a few members about this. Yes, it did pass. Perhaps, Heather, did you cover this at all? Could you give us some more color on it?
I didn't cover the meeting itself, but I have covered the issue. So he has directed Jeff Kaczynski, his head of homelessness, to get 1,000 people off the streets in the coming months, which is a big ask, but it would actually still leave 6,500 people on the street. So while it sounds huge, it's just a portion of the problem. And to do that, he wants to open 3 new navigation centers. They're still in discussions with Caltrans on 2 sites. And so there's a lot moving ahead. But the goal is 1,000 people off the streets in the very short term.
And was there a vote on another of his proposals to add some laundry and shower facilities to that office on Turk Street?
Yes, I believe the homeless.
The Department of Homelessness and Supportive Services is.
They're trying to get that up and running so the department can have its own office.
Let me bring on more of your calls. And again, join us at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Scott, you're on, Scott. Hi.
Yes, good morning. This is Scott from San Francisco. I got here in 1971. I'd like to say that I disagree with one of your speakers who says that 70% of the homeless people are from San Francisco who was evicted. I've been out on the streets and talking with these folks, and it's more like the other way around. They're all from someplace else. Not all of them, most of them. As regards to rent control that came in 1978, I think rent control and eviction control are a substantial factor in our homeless situation because we can't seem to have builders who want to build a lot of new places. And the Ellis Act and the Costa-Hawkins are the only two rays of sunlight for property owners who have lots of expenses pushed on them by the city, garbage, gas, electric, water, rent board fees, which we have no say in. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for those comments. Tim, you mentioned that 70%. I'm getting a number of comments on this, Camille.
Yeah, that's the city's number. That's a statistic that the city has gotten from its homeless count. And in fact, I had a discussion with Jeff Kaczynski, the head of the Department of Homelessness, about this. And he agrees that 70% of people who are roughly 70% of people who are currently homeless in San Francisco used to have a home in San Francisco. The only discussion we have is whether they became homeless because of an eviction, or they became homeless because they decided they could no longer pay the rent and just left, or they became homeless because they were living with a friend who then told them they couldn't live there anymore. There, I mean, you can't say that directly 70% of the people on the streets were faced a unlawful detainer eviction lawsuit. But I don't think there's a lot of disagreement at City Hall about the fact that roughly that percentage of the homeless used to be housed in San Francisco.
Could you say something, Tim? We're talking about recent things that have gone through the Board of Supervisors. Actually, already alluded to a couple that just went through the day after the mayor's death. But there was another measure that he co-sponsored about tenants being displaced from buildings that are deemed uninhabitable, which may have been, in fact, at least to some extent, inspired by Ghost Ship in Oakland.
Well, it was Ghost Ship and also some other buildings in San Francisco that, the city is trying to deal with both. I mean, we've had a lot of fires, particularly in the Mission. There's been a lot of buildings that have burned and tenants have been displaced by that. And also people being displaced because, yes, a building is determined to be uninhabitable, which we've also seen in the Mission. And you feel like, okay, people are living in a building that was deemed uninhabitable. It's not their fault that they were forced into that circumstances. It's the fault of whoever owned the building. So the city is now trying to make sure that if that happens, those people do get a priority for moving into affordable housing in San Francisco.
And again, Tim Redman is the editor of 48hills.org, an online daily newspaper. And our next caller is Ariana from San Francisco. Good morning.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. We live in one of the richest cities and one of the richest countries in the world, and yet we don't experience deep shame when we talk about homelessness. We think we can just complain about it as an aesthetic or business dampening problem or dangerous. And I think it's not just an easy problem to resolve and to give it over to the government. It's based on a change of ethos in which we understand that a civilized society is based on sharing, in which we all understand that our neighbors are part of our community and our family, and that we desire to sacrifice something of our own income or time or thoughtfulness to live and create the kind of community and world that is sustainable, both in the city and the nation and the planet that is threatened. We are all threatened with homelessness. We are killing our planet. And what we see with the homelessness here is what we're all faced with and threatened with when we let greed and the economics of reckless capitalism determine the outcome of our society and ignore moral rectitude that is based on restraint and sacrifice.
All right. I thank you for that. It's an editorial comment. I appreciate hearing from you. I'm just wondering, actually sort of piggybacking off that comment, how much Ed Lee talked a lot about unity in the city. And again, we have these factions and we have progressives and moderates and we have, you know, fights going on now that have continued for quite some time. I think he almost had a kind of dream of unity, of bringing people together in that way and fighting problems like homelessness through unity in the city. Anybody want to comment on whether that can get more traction? Or, you know, I mean, again, a lot has to do with leadership, but just in general, the mood to maybe inspire the vision that Ed Lee had or something along those lines. Alex?
Well, first of all, I think Ariana may be adding her name to the list of mayoral candidates. That was quite a stump speech. I believe that Mayor Lee came into office at a somewhat unprecedented time, and the first 6 months of his administration were indeed probably the most united the city has been in the past 20-ish years, certainly since district elections returned to the Board of Supervisors in 2000. But I would say part of that was due less to Mayor Lee and more to the circumstances. He certainly pushed hard, talking about the city family, trying to share credit with other people. But the rapid growth San Francisco has faced during his tenure made that a difficult effort to pull all the way through. I do think San Francisco and the Bay Area remain as a potential beacon for a coalescing around commonly held values, especially with what we see coming out of Washington, D.C. and the Trump administration. But I think the nature of politics in a democratic society will always involve a somewhat Darwinian exchange of ideas, and having my best ideas versus your best ideas so all the rest of us can decide who amongst us shall lead us all as one. We're never going to have unanimity. It would be lovely if some of the things that our previous caller just expressed were actually more in vogue. But I, after a year in San Francisco where we had no elections, the first one of those in about 20 years as well, we are going into an insanely topsy-turvy political year. 2018 will blow the doors off with two major elections for members of the Board of Supervisors and our mayor. And I don't forecast the bright, clear sky of unanimity. I see some storm clouds brewing.
Well, no doubt. But at the same time, Heather Knight, one thing that really needs to be taken into account here is the fact that Ed Lee spoke out very passionately about San Francisco being a sanctuary city. And that seems to be one thing that there is agreement on, at least in terms of the people who are in power in the city.
Yes, I think that's pretty well settled in San Francisco and is not going to change. I think Trump's election did bring a lot of unity at City Hall because it showed that the minor differences San Franciscans have, which can seem huge when you're in City Hall, but when you compare them to the national scene, they're actually not that different. And I think that the juxtaposition of San Francisco versus Washington, D.C. has been very clear and did bring some unanimity this year.
And let me ask you, Heather, of all the rumored or declared candidates who are running for mayor or may run for mayor, would any of them take the city in a dramatically different direction?
That's a good question. Not dramatically, I don't think. I think everybody I've talked to so far agrees homelessness is job number one. Affordable housing is right up there. We need to clean the streets and get quality of life improved. I think everybody pretty much agrees on those. So I don't see anybody taking it in a dramatically different turn or saying the streets are great, everything's fine.
And Tim, if I can go back to you, Tim Redman, let's talk about a name that's been mentioned in the course of this hour, Ron Conway. Let's talk about his influence in San Francisco politics, and is that going to change?
Well, that's one of the real interesting questions, is he was close to the mayor. And, you know, when we talk about unanimity and Ed Lee trying to bring everybody together, I've heard it often said that in San Francisco, everyone is a progressive until it comes to money. Until it comes down to who's going to pay the costs of what we're doing in the city and who's going to get that money and who's going to suffer and who is not. And that's where these big fault lines are drawn. And Ron Conway was on one side of that. Ron Conway is on the side, has always been on the side, that the tech industry should get tax breaks, should get regulatory relief, should be allowed to essentially do what the industry wants to do, because that will grow San Francisco. And on the flip side are people who say, no, wait, actually, the tech industry, it needs to be paying more of its fair share for the costs that's imposed on San Francisco. And we need to grow our role as a tech center a little more slowly and more thoughtfully and more carefully. So those are major fault lines that aren't going away. And I suspect I don't know. Ron Conway doesn't tend to take my phone calls. Maybe he takes yours, Alex. He isn't. He doesn't talk to me regularly. But I suspect that he's making quite a few calls to some of these candidates for mayor right now today to try to suss out where they are and where they are on his vision of San Francisco, which actually is a vision of a very wealthy city that is dominated by the tech industry, but where people who are not quite so well off and aren't part of that industry kind of get cast to the side a little bit.
Well, let me go back to this whole question of tech, Alex Clemons, with you, because there's a good deal of concern about, well, AI, I mean, artificial intelligence, but also about things like robots and self-driving cars and drones. I mean, they're all in the mix here in terms of the future of the city. And it lines up, you know, pretty much corporate versus many of the progressives and those who feel that there's too much encroachment.
Well, a couple of things. I think it's always important to illustrate and be transparent about one's biases. And on that front, I'd like to point out that I am a subscriber to the San Francisco Chronicle for Heather, and I have made donations in the past to 48 Hills. So my biases are laid clear. We have represented a robot company, and no drones, as far as I know. I should look into that and perhaps find a client in that department. I think
there's gold in them there hills, I think. Yeah.
That was a phrase from a long time ago that
not
is still true today.
Not necessarily 48 hills.
Yes.
Let's not dig those up.
We could use a little more gold.
We'll do the pledge break for 48 Hills in a couple minutes here. I think that it is true about San Francisco, and it has been said before, and unfortunately I didn't invent this, that San Francisco loves innovation but hates change. And the innovation we see is at a feverish breakneck pace. We don't know what's going to be invented next. We don't have a crystal ball that'll show us what San Francisco streets could look like with a variety of outcomes 20 years from now. We're trying to manage the change at the same time the change has already happened. We're frequently managing it from the rearview mirror. The pace of innovation is fast. The pace of government is intentionally slower and more credible and more transparent. And there's a juxtaposition there that I don't think can be resolved.
And we've got less than 4 weeks to decide.
we have 25 days to hear the vision.
Could be for the next decade, yeah.
Yeah, quite possibly. And to that point, I want to check in. Do either Tim or Heather or Michael, do any of you know whether London Breed's service as acting mayor accrues to her term, her potential term as mayor? Because if she serves as acting mayor from now through June, she will have served by November 2019. More than 2 years, and if that is the case, would be limited to only one further year. But if acting mayor doesn't qualify, I think you guys get the question. Do either of you know the answer to this?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think that that only applies if you're officially the interim, and I don't think her acting counts.
That's what I heard the city attorney say, that essentially in fact, Dennis Herrera did say pretty clearly that the person who is elected in June will be eligible to fill out Mayor Lee's term and then to run for two further terms.
Heather, what about the significance of London Breed being the first black female mayor of San Francisco?
Yeah, I think that's really important to recognize today, especially with the national scene going on. I heard some of Mayor Lee's staff talking that they were proud to have served the first Chinese-American mayor and now the first female African-American mayor, and how, you know, that is very significant and they want to keep that going. As a side note, I would say that it's kind of strange that San Francisco's only two female mayors have come because a man died.
Sad, so, yeah. But true. But also, London Breed has made this connection with kind of a legacy of, even though she was on a different side in many instances from Mayor Lee, she grew up in public housing, just like Ed Lee.
Yeah. What struck me attending a press conference she had yesterday that was a gun buyback at United Playas on Howard Street was just how different her personality is. In some ways, their backstories were similar because they both grew up in poor families in public housing and really came up through the ranks. But her personality is just so much bigger than Mayor Lee's was. She's really dynamic, has really hit the ground running, tells jokes.
Well, so did he.
Well, hers are not quite as corny. she's just a force to be reckoned with, I think.
She certainly has some charisma, but, you know, it's interesting the way you break these down when you think about there aren't that many black folks living in San Francisco anymore. Certainly if David Chu decides to throw his hat in the ring, he's got a big constituency, the same Chinese constituency to some degree that Mayor Lee had. And Mark Leno has a tremendous gay support in the city. So these things break down often in terms of demographics, to some degree at least. I guess what I'm getting at here is, where is London Breed's constituency compared to, let's say, a very strong constituency of David Chu, or for that matter, a strong constituency of Mark Leno?
I'd argue that London Breed has had and continues to have the most interesting personal narrative of any elected San Francisco official by far. Perhaps with the possible exception of now imprisoned State Senator Leland Yee. He certainly had a few asterisks that made him fascinating. London's got a personality, has charisma, is blunt-spoken, is fearless. She would have no compunctions explaining her strong opinion to anybody, from the people in this room to Donald Trump to the voters of San Francisco. She is somewhat of a force of nature unto herself.
It's an impressive young woman, to put it mildly.
I'd also just
But there are other impressive people in this race, too. I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, not at all. I just want to throw in the fact that San Francisco has an extremely well-educated and sophisticated electorate. And while there is some truth to the monolithic voting patterns of people who are from the LGBT community may gravitate towards an LGBT candidate, people in the Asian American community, et cetera, it is not a monolithic voting block in San Francisco. People in San Francisco want to meet and take the measure of the elected official who is seeking their vote, and frequently the best candidate, even though that candidate doesn't look like you or have the same identity traits as you, the best candidate frequently rises to the top.
Alex Clemens, again, is founder of Lighthouse Public Affairs and covers city politics on the website sfusualsuspects.com. And Tim Redmond, the Examiner, is reporting that former mayors Art Agnos and Willie Brown are a couple of names being discussed behind the scenes as possible caretaker mayors. That's according to multiple background sources, as are former city controller Ed Harrington and, be happy to hear this, former Assemblymember Tom Amiano.
I have heard all of those names mentioned as possible interim caretaker mayors. Now, remember, Ed Lee was going to be an interim caretaker mayor also. However, I think in the case of some of those names, I certainly think, for example, if Art Agnos were to be, if he were to get 6 votes as a caretaker mayor, I think he really would be a caretaker mayor. I think he has no interest in, and I, you know, so I that would that's a scenario where London Breed is no longer acting mayor, where somebody else just comes in for 5 months. And it is possible that there might be 6 votes for that, particularly if, let's remember, London Breed is now, and as I say, while she is a very energetic and talented person, she's trying to be supervisor from District 5, president of the board, and mayor all at the same time, and then presumably a 4th job, which is running for mayor. And it's really hard to do even one of those jobs well. And doing 4 of them well at the same time is going to be extremely difficult for her. So there may be pressure on people may be saying, you know what, even for 5 months, there's just too much work for one person to do those 3 jobs. Plus, by the way, isn't it a little weird that the chief of the legislative branch is also the head of the executive branch, which is really kind of defies the whole idea of constitutional separation of power. So I think there may be some sentiment for a separate interim mayor.
Go ahead, Alex.
I also wanted to point out one asterisk. That's a good analysis of the challenges that folks are facing right now. If people are worried about a repeat of what happened 7 years ago and an interim mayor saying suddenly, well, actually, I'd like the job on a permanent basis, there is one simple fix to this, which is the Board of Supervisors calling a special meeting for January 10th, the day after the filing deadline, and finding 6 votes only for candidates who have – only for potential mayoral aspirants who have not filed to run in the June 2018 election. They could still run, of course, but they'd need to mount a write-in campaign, which I'm not sure would endear them to people in San Francisco.
Well, a listener wants to know, will there be a runoff after the June mayor's election? Anybody have a crystal ball there?
We don't have runoffs in San Francisco. We have ranked choice voting, which provides an instant runoff capacity. So whoever – wound up in first place after the registrar does the tedious task of calculating out seconds and thirds and eliminating people according to the big spreadsheet, we would not have a runoff. We would have an elected mayor.
Read a comment from Holly who says, I'm a mom-and-pop landlord and a native San Franciscan. I wholeheartedly support rent control so that landlords can't just raise rents to market rate or evict people willy-nilly. However, I also can't afford to maintain the building in safe and beautiful shape on $900 rents. Let's protect tenants and be fair to owners who want to provide nice housing. And Mike has a question to you, Tim Redmond. He says, the bulk of the tech industry are knowledge workers who have good jobs and good wages. Is Tim Redmond biased against them?
No, I'm not biased against workers with good wages at all. I'm only biased against displacement. I'm biased against the idea that because I don't make as much money as you, you can kick me out of my apartment and take it instead. And in fact, it is in many cases not the tech workers who are doing that. It's the landlords and the speculators. It's, you know, tech workers are trying to pay rent too. And I'm not biased. I am biased, I will say. For the record, I am biased against real estate speculators who make their money kicking out low-income tenants. And that's what we're seeing a lot of in San Francisco, and I think that's a real serious problem.
Well, we'll let it end there and remind listeners that there will be a memorial celebration for Mayor Ed Lee taking place this Sunday afternoon in San Francisco City Hall Rotunda, and the mayor, who died of a heart attack on Tuesday, will lie in state in the Rotunda from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Thank you for being with us, Tim Redmond. Good to have you.
Of course.
Tim Redmond, again, is editor of 48hills.org, an online daily newspaper. Thank you, Heather Knight. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Heather Knight is columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle. And thank you, Alex Clemens.
Thank you, Michael.
And Alex Clemens is founder of Lighthouse Public Affairs. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. When we come back in the next hour, we're going to talk about the tax bill, and we're also going to talk about why the stock market is doing so well. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Our intern is Patrick Fitzgerald. Managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. Executive producer, Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.